Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
This is temporary storage at this facility in order to reduce the operational hurdles and costs associated with these containers to make sure that they get loaded onto ships as quickly as possible. We're also going to provide, as part of this effort, a payment to the shippers, basically $200 per container for dry goods, $400 per container for refrigerated or reefer containers. And this is designed to offset some of the logistical costs that will be involved.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack talking about a temporary site to house ag containers for shipping. It's called a Port of Seattle pop-up site.
These efforts in Seattle and Oakland are really designed to give us the ability to be able to meet the market demand in a timely way and the most efficient and most effective way from a cost standpoint, so that at the end of the day, we could see hopefully expansion of exports.
This is Agriculture Today.
Farm cost escalation, which really started in earnest back in the fall, starting kind of with fertilizer, a lot of issues around farm chemical prices. Those issues have not let up in the last months. And as we get closer to spring, we see no further signs that they will back down or improve for farmers. So farmers are going to feel pinched from a cost and inflationary standpoint, and I expect that to be fully in place as we go into 22.
Kevin McNew is the chief economist with Farmers Business Network, or FBN.
We don't see areas of costs coming down. We see fertilizer prices continuing to rise higher as we go into spring and farmers look to source spring fertilizer needs because of rising natural gas prices caught up in the pitfalls of the Russian-Ukraine war. We see chem costs, namely glyphosate, still resonating at record high values with no signs of backing down. And we also see cash rents, which nearly half of farmers are subject to in terms of U.S. production. And we see cash rents going up as well. In the last 6 months, we've seen cash rents in the country climb by anywhere from $40 to $80 an acre just in a brief short time as a result of higher commodity prices. So again, while commodity prices themselves are inflating, overall we see costs inflating even more in the short run.
And there have been challenges on the federal side. The administrator for the Farm Service Agency is Zach Ducheneau.
There have been some issues that we've had to work through for sure. But what I've told a couple of our producer groups here this week is if anybody ever gets in front of you and gripes about being in the administrator's office, let them know that I'll do it again. I love this job. There's so much opportunity to help producers out there across the country. If anybody's complaining, they don't want the job bad enough.
And says they're working at getting all of those state-level positions filled.
The state committee level, we've got state committee members on, I believe, in nearly all of the states. And we've got processes in place to fill them. But also, and more importantly, Tony, what everybody is really concerned about as they think about state committees and SEDs is, are they going to get a timely decision? Should they have an appeal that goes there? And should they need things generated out of those two seats? We have processes in place, and we're supporting our offices where we don't have the full state committee or the SED placed yet, but we're really proud of the caliber and the quality of the SEDs that we've got.
He also talks about getting the local FSA offices reopened.
We're getting the staff back in the office, and I like to be very particular about the way I describe that, Tony, because we hear that the FSA isn't staffed, and we are. We had staff out there doing that job all through the last 2 years, and not only doing our standing programs, ARC PLC, the disaster programs, the price support programs, our loan programs, but also a lot of ad hoc programs. And they got them all out the door. And I've had some producers say, you know, it wasn't as easy as it is when we're in the office, but we got it done. And that's what's important. Our staff are out there getting it done. We're back to 75% in the office in most cases, and an overwhelming majority of the cases actually, and we're starting to take people in with or without an appointment in some places as well. So we look forward to the face-to-face conversations as much as anybody, but we have to make sure that we're preserving the safety of our staff and our producers who have to interact with us.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
At least in the past, as we've observed, very volatile, higher markets, as we've seen, that will tend to run up in prices. And then once we got to a place where we have, momentum fatigue, then we have tended in past either to crash altogether if we found out that the underlying assumptions that we thought were on supply demand that were driving these markets are false, or if they hold true, we tend to go into a trading range.
Dan O'Brien is a Kansas State grain marketing economist talking about the idea of trading ranges.
Just interesting to see, since we ran up in, say, May corn, that we've traded in a range pretty much of 725 to 775 and closed yesterday almost dead in the middle of that at 754. For wheat, we've gotten into a trading range of about 1050 up to, on the very top, about 13, closing towards the lower end of that as of yesterday at about 1092. You know, and we've seen a whole lot of volatility just within the last week in the wheat market, but we're still within that trading range yet where we've been at. We look at soybeans. We've ran up into the trading range of about 15. This is for the May contract, 1575 up to a high of about 1760. Closed yesterday, again, almost right in the middle of that at about 1668. So, again, you look at these markets, a lot of volatility. News comes out. People are reacting to whatever's hitting. But in a way, it's almost, I wouldn't say it's comforting, but it's somewhat reassuring that we're in a trading range. We know we have issues on the supply-demand side in the world markets, a lot of it caused by what's happening between Russia and Ukraine, but also some South America issues. Also some issues for palm oil off in Southeast Asia, of all things that would affect us, but it is affecting us. So we've got trading ranges established. We have volatile markets, but we're tending to find, it seems like, some consistency in the futures, even at these high levels.
With all the news around the world that's hitting the wheat market, it's interesting that exports are lackluster.
Well, to the chagrin of our wheat organizations in the state, we haven't had strong wheat exports yet. Now, with the concerns about Ukraine and their ability to get a crop out, what could happen with Russia and their ability to trade, you've got a lot of concern around the world with regard to having adequate wheat supplies. But it doesn't seem yet to have expressed itself in stronger U.S. wheat demand. We're still, as of the latest USDA Foreign Ag Service numbers that come out representing the situation on March 10th, we're about 86% of the way in terms of what's been shipped and bought ahead to the USDA's 800 million bushel projection, and we're about 79% of the way through the marketing year. So that's almost, it's not hand to mouth, but it's not far ahead. You know, people are buying their needs as they go. Compare that to corn. Of course, that marketing year starts September 1, so we're about 52% of the way through the marketing year, about 82% of the way bought, shipped or bought ahead for corn. And for grain sorghum, about 88% of the way shipped or bought, and again, 52% of the way through. For soybeans, we're 94% of the way shipped or bought towards meeting the USDA's projection of 2.09 billion bushels. And again, we're 52% of the way through the marketing year. So at least as we sit today, before really anticipated demand comes into the wheat market, we've got the other markets, corn, grain, sorghum, soybeans, running a bit ahead of wheat in terms of the export market and what's, quote, on the books to be shipped yet.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Given that conflict, we would still not be suggesting that farmers change their rotations. They would still be using RP at a fairly high level, and commodity title decisions likely won't matter.
University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnitke.
As we're looking at the Ukraine-Russian crisis, the first thing that we observe is that that crisis has cut exports and likely will hinder 2022 production from Ukraine. That's likely to be bullish for crop prices, with the largest impact being on wheat because Ukraine is a major producer of wheat. Next on corn, because Ukraine exports corn, and also wheat and corn are substitutes, and followed by soybeans. That is likely to be the first impact. The second impact may not be as bullish, so we shouldn't get overconfident about those higher prices. However, this Ukraine crisis likely has made the chance of having higher prices higher. And if we had a widespread drought in the United States or some other production shortfall, we could see very high prices because we're looking at a low stocks-to-use ratio, and the Ukraine crisis has hindered production in another part of the world.
And talks about production cost.
The Ukraine-Russian crisis has been another hit on the supply chain, which will make everything more difficult, particularly for grain movements. Russian sanctions and bans will likely have negative impacts on natural gas and fertilizer supplies, which will likely raise those prices. Again, those prices could get higher even for the 2023 crop. We're looking now at the last time we looked at fertilizer prices at $1,500 for anhydrous ammonia. Again, the next time we see that, those could be higher. We prepared budgets, and we're starting with Northern Illinois, looking at the current situation. We use prices of $6 for corn, $14 for soybeans, current fall bids. We put fertilizer in there at higher levels with $1,400 per ton, being the price we used for anhydrous ammonia, $220 cost for Northern Illinois per acre for fertilizer. That could be higher if we're using 28% or those per cost fertilizer prices go higher. We built in higher premiums for crop insurance because they will be higher because of the higher projected price. Still, we get high operator and land returns, even given those higher costs, and pretty favorable farmer returns, $172 per acre for corn, $84 for soybeans at average cash rent. Those budgets have a positive margin for corn. As we go across regions in Illinois, all regions have a positive margin for corn. $52 in central Illinois high productivity, $82 in low productivity central Illinois situations, and $78 in southern Illinois. Those current values point to corn having larger margins than soybeans, and if we look at the crop insurance and take 85% or 80% at both corn and soybeans, you face the basic same risk for both corn and soybeans. At this point, that does not suggest shifting large acres in Illinois. If we're looking at those corn and soybean decisions, it would suggest maintaining those long-term rotations, 50% corn, 50% soybeans in central Illinois, higher levels for corn in northern Illinois, and lower levels in southern Illinois. And I would also note that corn prices likely could face higher upward pressure in the future, depending on what the scenario turns out to be.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I was thinking about today and how we so focus on supporting our farmers, as we should, our farmers and ranchers. And another piece of this is supporting the quality of life for them and their families.
Debbie Stabenow is a senator from Michigan, also the chairwoman of the Senate Ag Committee.
This is not just on the farm. This is folks who want to live in the small towns around Michigan and around the country, and certainly in a small town like where I grew up in Clair, Michigan. And to do that, we have to make sure that there's a wide variety of support and services available so that they can continue to enjoy what I think is just an incredibly important quality, enriched quality of life of living in rural America.
Stabenow opening up a Senate Ag Committee hearing on rural America and health care. Now, the ranking member is from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
There is no question that families in rural America need access to affordable, quality health care, child care, and elder care in their communities. USDA Rural Development has a number of programs to help purchase, construct, and improve rural health clinics, child care centers, nursing homes, and other facilities to meet the need and build up rural care economy. I strongly support the USDA rural development programs that make funding available to these vital services, and we appreciate the Undersecretary's hard work in providing leadership in this area. However, we should not approach this as a field of dreams scenario, where if we build it, they will come. Rural economic viability a strong economic floor is what is necessary to support a care economy. Federal policies and regulations can have an outsized impact on the economy of rural America. We've seen it time and time again, and we're seeing it right now. If we truly want rural America's families to have access to quality health care, child care, and elder care, then we must provide the stability and certainty necessary for our farmers and ranchers and the businesses they support to thrive.
But the ranking member also took time to say there are bigger issues that need to be discussed right now.
As our nation's ag stakeholders continue to face supply chain disruptions, high input costs, tariffs, and uncertainty surrounding global commodity prices, there is still no nominee for either USDA Undersecretary of Trade or Chief Agriculture Negotiator, USTR. This means there's no trade agenda currently standing up for our nation's farmers and producers, a time of hyper-uncertainty surrounding global commodity markets. And when we seek to work with the administration on possible solutions to address some of the most pressing issues facing the world today, like extending the deadline for CRP sign-up to help mitigate already high inflation and food security concerns made worse by Russia's ruthless invasion of Ukraine, USDA declines. Shouldn't we be doing everything in our power to address this and other issues that will very likely negatively impact global commodity markets for years to come? Again, misplaced priorities seem to be the common theme of the administration. I would like to have Secretary Vilsack testify before our committee, who, despite interest from myself and many of my colleagues, has not appeared before our committee since its nomination hearing in February of 2021. That's more than a year ago. That's simply unacceptable.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So the choice cutout on Friday was $2.60, is up about $5 from the Friday before. And then select was $2.52, up about $3 from the week before. So the fact those are up is good. There's been a lot of commentary there. I'm going to get to breaking down the market channels in a moment in my demand numbers. But if those numbers could firm up and some are anticipating they'll actually come up as we turn to grilling season and so forth, that would be a good thing. There's going to be some supply tightness in the beef industry as we proceed throughout the rest of the year. There's reason for optimism if general macroeconomic conditions can hold on, that we'll see the cutout come back up and possibly with that pull Fed cattle prices back up. So, yeah, watch that in the weeks ahead.
Kansas State Livestock Marketing Economist, Dr. Glenn Tonzer.
It's different by market channel. So remember, the Meat Demand Monitor, it's joint project beef pork checkoff. Ongoing survey effort gives me a fairly current pulse on the domestic industry of like the food service message is good for February. So food service demand was up for every product we looked at. So ribeye steak, ground beef, pork chops, go down the list. Those that we looked at were all up from January and up from the year before. When you flip it over to retail, so think grocery store for at-home consumption, then it was more of a mixed bag. So demand for ground beef in February was up from January, but several other products, including ribeye steak and pork chops, were down from January. But that's where if you compare January versus the year before, you get a different story. So there's a little bit of seasonal pullback, if you like, in February at the grocery store, but we're still well above where we were before the year before. So we entered 2022, whether we're talking food service or retail, with a much stronger meat demand story than we had 2021. I tried to set that stage earlier when we talk about the Russia-Ukraine ability to absorb it, if you like. U.S. consumers have reaffirmed their affinity for meat, and we continue to see that in aggregate. I also want to interject here. There's a lot of discussion about inflation. So, you know, the role of energy prices is not immune to Russia-Ukraine. I don't want to talk about Russia-Ukraine forever, but we can't ignore some of these things. Right. Food inflation is a component of that, not just gas inflation. And I've been trying to track in this meat demand monitor what consumers' expectations for meat prices the next month. So what do they think they're going to be? I've been doing that since about March of 2021. And so far, those expectations, they peaked back in November. So we're sitting here doing this interview in the middle of March. You know, about 2 weeks from now, I'll know what in March people are thinking for April. It's going to be important to watch that. Have consumers turned more pessimistic with the Russian-Ukraine event and broader inflation in our economy before they start anticipating higher prices again? Or was that November truly a peak? I interject that here because it's not just useful for me to track that, but broader is consumer sentiment and staying power of domestic meat demand still there? I hope it is, and there's still some good signs, but there's also clouds on the horizon on the macroeconomic front that are worth monitoring.
How do these numbers compare to USDA?
USDA numbers, they're slightly different, mainly in the timing. So the latest I have available is for the month of January, and these are no longer survey-based, is why it's worth watching both of these. But for January here of 2022, domestic beef demand fell 1% compared to December, but was up a full 12% compared to January 2021. So they reinforced basically what I just said just over 1 month earlier. Most importantly, from August of 2021 through January of 2022, demand has been up compared to the year before. So, you know, if you do the math on that, 5 months in a row, we had stronger demand than the year before domestically. That is good. I also track export meat demand using similar USDA data. Now we're talking FAS. And export demand in January for beef was up 1% compared to December, but a full 34% compared to the January before. And again, export demand for U.S. beef has been up since April of 2021 when we do a year-over-year pulse on this. This is directly related to my concern earlier about stepping away from globalization. 2021 was a great year for U.S. beef exports. There's reason for optimism as we go through 2022 that will sustain, even if we don't sustain the same volume, maybe the value will stay at an elevated level just because we're opening markets and there's consumers in certain pockets of the world that are reaffirming their interest in buying U.S. beef. I hope that continues. It needs to continue to support the size of the U.S. beef industry that many of our listeners want.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
During this time period, Jan, Feb, March time period, you know, consumption kept getting reduced around the world. Production kind of was bumped up a little bit, and ending stocks were bumped up somewhat. We see the world production consumption surplus in this instance, you know, approaching 4 million bales of cotton. So certainly, you know, a little bit of negativity was going on.
Trying to answer the question of how did we get where we are? Gerald Nieper, president of Trucot in Bakersfield, California.
February 23rd, 2020, Italy became a global hotspot. They essentially locked down the country, you know, based upon a government decree that was issued on that day. You know, one brutal stretch between February 24th and February 28th, the Dow lost almost 12.5%. March cotton was down almost 11% that day, down 734 points. You know, the Dow hit a record high on February 12th, 2020, and they lost another and lost over 11,000 points by the time it bottomed out on March 23rd. So from February 12th to March 23rd, the Dow Jones was down 38% at the low. Cotton did not escape this this beating. Between February 24th and when it finally bottomed on April 1st, the nearby contract lost about 30% of its value, or almost 21 cents a pound.
And thanks to panic, supply demand also hammered as well.
Between the April-May production estimates, between the April and May supply demand estimates, USDA, you know, cut world production by 13.2 million bales. World ending stocks jumped almost 14 million bales. U.S. ending stocks, which had fallen down to 5.1 million bale estimate, are now back up to 7.1 as domestic consumption and exports were cut. Yet prices bottomed on April 1st. What happened? Well, during the week of March 16th, after the Fed cut rates to zero on an emergency meeting, on Sunday the 15th, 2020, on Wednesday of that week, we had billionaire investor Bill Ackman on CNBC who shouted, you know, hell is coming. He called for a 30-day shutdown of the economy. We need to shut it down now. Dalip Singh, market desk chief of the New York Fed, said it was sheer unadulterated panic of a magnitude that was far worse than in 2008 or 2009, far worse. You can see at the top there, Jerome Powell said the pandemic is just raging. And we don't have a plan. Nobody in the world has a plan. He said, we're going to try to get ahead of this. And we're going to do that by announcing a ton of stuff on Monday morning, Monday, March 23rd. What happened on March 23rd? Well, whatever they did, it worked. Number one, they pledged to backstop an array of lending announced that day. It would unleash a torrent of private borrowing based on the mere promise of central bank action. Together with a massive assist by Congress, which authorized hundreds of billions of dollars that would cover any losses. The Dow Jones made its low on March 23rd. A week later, on April 1, cotton did the same. March 25th, cotton passed the CARES Act, signed into law on the 27th. One of the first responses was the IRS issued the first of three economic stimulus payments for people who were eligible. Soon after, in mid-May, the Paycheck Protection Program. And then the Fed, you know, embarked upon a quantitative easing program of all times. You know, the week ending March 11th, total assets at the Fed were $4.3 trillion. A month later, they had jumped up to $2 trillion to go along with zero interest rate. You talk about injecting some liquidity into the system.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The Spot Market Hog Pandemic Program is designed to assist producers who sold hogs through a spot market sale between April 16th of 2020 and September 1st of 2020, when we were having all of the processing facility shutdowns due to the pandemic.
Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Tuchino.
Some of the producers that we missed were those producers who, as opposed to euthanizing their hogs, they may have sold through a livestock auction or maybe sold to local folks that took them to a meat locker. We're also working to include folks that sold through negotiated contracts that are negotiated on a daily basis. The hogs that we're covering must be suitable and intended for slaughter to be eligible. So immature swine, baby pigs, for example, are ineligible. Hog producers will have to submit documentation to support information provided in their previous application. Those producers will have a chance to come in and make adjustments to their applications to ensure that they're enrolling all of their eligible hogs.